hello there, Bobbers.
Hello.
And welcome to a brand new episode of the Confused Breakfast Podcast. I wish we would have changed the camera so it was just on my
just lip. On your mouth. Yes.
Do you remember the pure joy of a trip to the video rental store as a kid?
I do.
Excitement of walking down the aisles, browsing the names and the artwork, and finally picking out the movie you're going to take home with you. Sure, it's hard to beat the ease of the modern era and streaming platforms where you don't even have to leave your couch, but there was something truly special about making that trip, grabbing your favorite movie, and taking the subway back to Coney Island. On this podcast, we revisit and dissect some of our favorite childhood movies from that magical era to see if they still move us the way they did as kids. I'm your host, Mike Schulte, and joining me as always, two dudes who look amazing in leather vests without undershirts on, Sean Pryor and AJ Venn. How the heck are ya?
I was going to bring, it's not leather, but it's denim. I was going to bring my Misfits vest.
And why didn't you?
I don't know.
You're not wearing your cut.
It's in storage along with my trench coat.
My trench coat. That would be...
They're getting dry cleaned.
That would be like your gang's like... Like uniform is just trench coats.
Just trench coats.
I have a question about this later. Can we just okay. Can we talk about this later?
Right, that's fine.
Fair enough.
Stop. Let's fair get enough. To the movie first, okay?
All right.
Are we coming up with our own gangs?
Yes,
yeah.
We are.
Hell yeah.
Well, boys, let's continue on our month-long series of movies from the 1970s. On this episode, we will discuss a movie that is ranked number 16 in Entertainment Weekly's top 50 cult films of all time.
Wow.
A movie that was perhaps the first ever to feature an entire music score of synthesized rock and roll music. A movie based on a book that was based on an ancient Greek story that was intended to break the romanticism of gangs from a musical. We are, of course, talking about 1979's The Warriors. And for those looking to find this movie, as of the recording of this episode in early August 2022, I found it for free with a Showtime subscription.
Oh, yeah.
Which means I still haven't canceled.
I was going to say, I chose not to go down that dark, dark road.
I did.
You're still there.
I'm still there. I'm lost on the road somewhere. I was hoping one of you would come down and find me and go, here's the way out from Showtime.
We need a sponsor that does compiles all of your subscriptions and gets rid of them for you.
Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah.
I want that.
If you're listening, let's talk about it.
I watched it on my Blu-ray. So I'll just lean back.
New chairs in the studios,
new
right?
Chairs.
If you notice a lot of spinning and swiveling, that's what we got here.
New chairs, who dis?
Well, in order to properly dissect and review this movie with a modern eye, we must first discuss it with pure nostalgia. AJ, let's start with you. Tell us the first time you saw this movie and what your nostalgic rating is.
High school. Anyways, I had a buddy named Dylan. Dylan. You son of a bitch. And he let me borrow this movie. This was the one that utilized all of the comic book transitions.
So it was the director's cut.
Yeah.
Right? Isn't that the difference?
I think so.
Yeah.
And so I remember watching that and I kept it for a long time. I'm really sorry, Dylan. I should have given it back, Sean. It's been
it's a
my
curse.
Life.
Yeah. It's a curse.
For a long time.
Don't give AJ anything.
But I fell in love with this movie, kind of. You know, obviously, I was a little older at that time rather than watching it 10 years old.
Yeah.
But I thought it was just such a cool, interesting style of the way that this movie was made. And I did. I really enjoyed it, and finally I gave it back, and I think I got my own copy at one point and then lost it. So, but back then, I'd say that this is the most solid 7.5.
Nice.
Damn, son. Sean, what about you, buddy?
Yeah, this is just kind of back when I was, consuming Quentin Tarantino, Stanley Kubrick, everything, really diving into, I need to know about these directors, and Walter Hill is one of them, and I loved 48 Hours. I watched that with my dad, and he mentioned that he did this movie as well. And I heard about it, Tarantino would talk about it in interviews and shit.
Is
like that.
Is he a fan of this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah. actually, yeah, because we talked about that in Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah.
The mouthpiece.
Oh, close up. And when I watched it, I got it from Hollywood Video. Loved that Hollywood Video. I probably have to say I'm around where AJ is. Probably, I'm going to say 7.
There you go. 7 for Sean. Guys, I've never seen this movie.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Shit.
Yeah, I don't know why. I was trying to go back through and figure out why I'd never seen it before. For some reason,
wow.
I know that there's a movie out there, maybe you can tell me what it is, where there's gangs, but they like dance fight instead of actually fight? Is there some movie out there where they like do breakdancing instead of fighting each other?
That doesn't exist.
I'm pretty sure it does.
Are you talking about West Side Story?
I mean, but I feel like it's not that.
Is it The Wanderers, which this movie was trying to
be? I don't know.
Oh.
I was under the impression that there was a movie where there was a bunch of gangs that roamed the city and they like dance battled. And I'm like, not for me, dog.
That's West Side Story.
Okay, well, whatever. Well, I never saw that either.
Hey, okay. When you're a jet all the way.
But I definitely like just never wanted to watch this movie. Although
because of that, you thought
I just thought that's what it was. And then I remember in college, my roommate bought the PS2 game.
Oh, yeah.
Which was awesome, but I never still connected the dots that this movie was this video game.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, I had never seen this until about 3 days ago.
Wow, dude. It's
very special.
So I'm excited.
That's awesome.
I'm excited to tell you what my thoughts are about
it. I'm excited to hear it.
Yeah.
Yeah, no executive producer on that. So that takes us to a 7.25 for a pre-rating, which is pretty decent. That is slightly better than Cool Runnings and slightly worse than Batman, actually. Hmm. Batman kind of fits the vibe of this movie a little bit, right?
Yeah, kind of.
I agree.
Really, it feels fine.
Yeah.
It was just a grimy Gotham with New York and stuff.
Yeah.
It's like some Burton-esque vibes here and there. Yeah.
Well, it's time to learn all the important and pertinent details of the movie. Sean, that's your job. Fill us in on what you got.
This is a fun one. Produced by Lawrence Gordon and Frank Marshall and Joel
Gordon
Silver.
Savior, Joel Silver.
Written by Walter Hill and David Schaber. Based on the novel by Saul Urich. Cinematography by Andrew Laszlo, who also did Innerspace, Star Trek The Final Frontier, and everyone's favorite, Ghost Dad.
I didn't see the Warriors, but I saw Ghost Dad.
Horrifying in retrospect. Edited by Billy Weber, Susan E. Morse, and David Holden. Music by Barry Devorzin. Directed by Walter Hill. Cast: Michael Beck, James Remar, Dorsey Wright, Brian Tyler, David Harris, Tom McKittrick, Marcelino Sanchez, Terry Michos, Deborah Van Valkenburg, it's a good one, Roger Hill, and David Patrick Kelly. Based on the novel of the same name, The Warrior's Story was optioned by Lawrence Gordon, who commissioned David Schaber to write a script. Having worked with Walter Hill on The Driver, Hill and Schaber set off to get financing. The team brought the film to Paramount, who were interested in youth films at the time. I love working with you, urban youths.
Youths?
Yes.
Youths.
Two youths.
Two what? I'm
sorry. Yeah. We will cover that.
Yeah.
Lawrence Gordon had a good relationship with Paramount and said that they could make the film very cheap, which they did. Casting took place in New York, and while casting Alien, Walter Hill saw a movie with Sigourney Weaver that also starred Michael Beck. The filmmakers wanted Tony Danza, but he just got on a sitcom called Taxi, so Terry Michos was cast. Hill wanted a Puerto Rican actress for the role of Mercy, but Deborah Van Valkenburg's agent convinced the casting director to cast her instead. Walter Hill thought Thomas G. Waits was the next James Dean, but did not get along with him on set. Hill wanted Waits' character killed off immediately, and Waits demanded his name be taken off the film, which remains off of there today.
Yeah, on IMDb, you cannot find him.
I was reading this story, and I'm like, wait, who was that
guy?
Yeah.
He's the guy. I mean, I don't know if you guys have seen the thing.
He looks like one of our new producers, Alex Schulte, actually.
Yeah, you think so?
He kind of does.
Okay.
Yeah, I could see that. You don't have to say, but he's one of the, I think he's Fuchs in the thing, is the only.
Fox?
In this movie, yeah. I think he's Fuchs in the movie The Thing,
which neither of us have clearly seen.
All right, so there's that. So
wow, I think we just broke Sean's brain on that one. He's like, "What? No, it's pronounced Fox or Fuchs."
I was about to flip this table over. Like, I know this.
In the movie, his name's Fox.
Okay, that's fucked up. I don't like that. Because the only other thing I know him from is The Thing. But yeah, he really liked this guy a lot. And just when they started to get to filming, that they got like heated arguments and pushing matches and everything like that. And
oh, wow.
His exit, which we'll get to, is just kind of abrupt. But he was supposed to be a way bigger part in the movie. He just kind of wanted him killed off because he wanted him off the set because it was crazy. Just that bad. The film was shot in Coney Island in and around New York. Some scenes were shot at Astoria Studios. Filming was hot and tough, with the budget going over and shooting schedule delays, as well as having to avoid actual gang activity. There was a double murder, actually, where they were filming one night and had to be shut down for, like, I don't know, 2 days or something like that.
Jeez, dude.
The Warriors opened in theaters on February 9th, 1979. On a budget of $4 million, the film made $3.5 million its opening weekend. So it would go on to make some more and become a cult classic.
Well, did you hear that? So, like, they started off number one at the box office for that first week. And then and despite negative reviews, which I'm sure we're going to get to, but then actual gangs started wanting to go to the theaters to watch it.
Yeah.
Which would then they would run into rival gangs at the theater and would cause issues.
Yeah.
So they took it out of, they pulled the movie out of
which
theaters.
Which is a huge move because like the only times that that's been done, I mean, studios usually do that, but like Stanley Kubrick pulled Clockwork Orange out of the theater, which is actually kind of weird that that movie is kind of related to this one. Like the 70s started off with A Clockwork Orange, got pulled because of gang activity in the movie, and then this got pulled because of gang activity in the movie. It's kind of weird.
Producer Logan has informed me that the movie I'm thinking of is called Breakin' from 1984, and it's a breakdancing gang movie.
Breakin'.
So make sure we'll probably cover that next week. Yeah. So make sure everybody gets all caught up on that.
Boom.
Well, we know you have at least one friend who loves this movie just as much as you do. Hit the little share icon on your podcast app. Directly message the episode to him. It's so easy. You just go, you should listen to this podcast. They're funny guys.
Yep.
Here's the link. Click on it.
You would not believe how funny they are.
You would not believe. They're really cool guys. Feel like we're friends with them.
Yes.
Whatever. Just do it. Just say some stupid message. That is one of the best way you can support this podcast is share it. You can go to our website, confusedbreakfast.com, buy some stuff, check out our movie ratings that we've done so far on nearly 100 episodes. And one of the biggest ways you can support us, this is huge for us. We have a huge announcement coming up here about how we're evolving this show, but if you support us on patreon.com/confusedbreakfast, that is one of the direct ways that allows us to do what we're going to be doing here soon. So
it's literally life-changing, and thank you guys so much who have donated already, and continue.
You're direct supporting. You're also getting to vote on future movies. You're getting to listen to bonus audio content, private Discord channel. We got a lot of fun on that thing, so go check it out, patreon.com/confusedbreakfast.
Totes.
Up next, we have AJ, who does the research for us, tells us all about the critics, the ratings, the reviews. What you got, man?
Can you dig it?
Because
we are going to the tomato meter.
Gross.
You guys know this is not gross.
Can I guess?
Yeah, you can.
79%?
No.
Dang. I just won 1979.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that was really cool.
I get that. Okay. Okay, it's fun. That was fun.
That's a Smashing Pumpkins song. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Billy Corgan.
87%.
Pretty cool.
Certified fresh. 87%. I was actually surprised by that. I'm going to be honest with you. Like,
I kind of was too, man.
Yeah. I just didn't think that this would be as well received, to be completely honest.
Yeah.
That's 19 on the list of all movies we have done. It is slightly below The Matrix, slightly above Tremors.
Wow.
As far as the critics are concerned.
Above that Tremors. Is a triple fucking feature. I'm writing that one down, actually. I like it so much.
Well, audiences agree at 88%, and then IMDb comes in at a 7.5.
That's tied. We had three movies at 7.5. We had Beetlejuice, Batman, and The Warriors of everything we've done. So that's the company that everybody thinks it's in.
Okay. Well, I think that's pretty good company. We started with Mr. Rajib.
Let's do it.
Chicago Sun-Times. He gave it a 50 out of 100.
Okay.
50 out of 100 or whatever this rating system is that he carries on. Basically half of whatever he gives. Half of a thumb. I don't know. this said, The Warriors is a real peculiarity. Peculiarity is a tough word. Yep, I knew I was going to stumble. I'm sorry, guys. A movie about street gang warfare written and directed as an exercise in mannerism. There's hardly a moment where we believe that the movie's gangs are real or that their members are real people or that they inhabit a real city. That's where the peculiarity comes in. I don't think we're supposed to. No matter what impression the ads give, this isn't even remotely intended as an action film. It's a set piece. It's a ballet of stylized male violence.
Cool.
I think that's why I only gave it a 50. And that's why I gave it half.
Actually sounds really cool. If he had not told me the rating and he read that, I'd say, oh, cool.
I was like, yeah, I definitely agree. This is great. Yeah.
You liked it, huh? Well, I only gave it one thumb.
Exactly. I don't know what's so bad about it in that regard, I guess.
I want to believe that when he like sits down to write a review and he's like, oh, I've used this word before, that word, but peculiarity.
Yes.
I think I'm going to use that at least twice in this whole entire review just to trip somebody up in the near future.
Some guy's going to have a podcast in the future and he's going to struggle reading that.
I can't wait. I did go a little long probably on the critical reviews, but I just really liked the way that this one was written. This is from timeout.com, and it's a little bit longer. I apologize, but I just really, really like it. Okay? Okay, shut up.
It's just cool. I got this.
There you go. Lean back. Get comfy, boys. From its powerhouse opening, in which all of the gangs of New York gather in tribal splendor in Riverside Drive Park, to the last-ditch stand in dilapidated Coney Island, Hill has elevated his story of a novice gang on the run into a heroic epic of Arthurian dimensions, with sex as sorcery and the flick knife as sword. Anyone expecting gritty realism will be disappointed, but Hill is offering something better. Shooting entirely on New York locations at night, he has transformed the city into a phantasmagoric labyrinth of weird tribes in fantastic dress and makeup who move over and under the streets as untouched as troglodytes by the civilization sleeping around them. The novice gang from Coney Island accidentally encounters some middle-class swingers on the subway, and the two groups stare at each other like aliens from different galaxies, while the gang's new female recruit has to be gently restrained from instinctively putting a hand up to straighten her hair. The movie mixes ironic humor, good music, and beautifully photographed suspense. It's one of the best of 1979.
Dang.
Was 1979 a big year at all?
I think so. That's one of my favorite years for some reason in music and film.
Wow.
I don't know why. There's like this one, The Fog, Phantasm, especially for horror. I think Alien came out like early this year, maybe 78, but sorry.
I guess we'll find out what your rating is later, huh?
I guess so.
That was a 100 out of 100. That was beautiful. 10 out of 10, everything. But of course, the users have something else to say, and that'll be like, how did this trash get the green light to be made? Said Foxhound in 2021.
Fuchshound.
Fuchshound, sorry.
Give it to him.
Hell yeah.
I'll never say that word the same again.
I know. It's ruined. It is ruined for me. Yeah, this to say, a complete and utter waste of time watching this. A film that serves no purpose except to try to promote and glorify gang violence. This is a film that really stoops down to Texas Chainsaw Massacre's level. Should never have been given the green light to be made. Pathetic with a capital P.
I planted that one.
Back in 21. Planted that one.
My subtle dig in Jaws. Yep. It's like, I know it's one of these fucking.
I'm going to go back in time real quick into 2021. AJ will find this one.
I know AJ wants to do the Warrior, so.
I don't agree with like the glory. We will definitely get to it. The glorifying the being in a gang thing. Like I don't feel that that's correct at all.
I don't think so either.
I don't think so either. Yeah.
We'll get to it. Sorry.
Last one here, guys. This is a 3 out of 10. It's entitled "The Power of the Mime," and this is in 2006.
Band name.
Yeah.
Mime.
Mime. Couple of questions you have to ask yourself. In the beginning, you see a mime gang. Now, come on, how threatening is a mime going to be? Secondly, all these hardcore gangs are actually getting change and paying for their train tickets. Yeah, that's badass, that is. I have to say I was disappointed with the film, especially with the super soft gangs who looked like they were all racing home to mommy. He said mummy. I don't like it, though.
Well, that's British.
Okay. Mummy.
Yeah, mum.
A comfy bed, glass of milk, and their teddy bear. I was expecting a bleak future styling, maybe something along the lines of Escape from New York. All I got was the futuristic look of the 70s. A lot of empty streets and some subways that always turned up on time. The only redeeming character was the baddie bottle fingers. And that's it.
Hell yeah.
I like, do you notice what AJ does? He usually gives us two critic reviews.
Yeah.
Then he gives us like a really shitty one.
Yeah.
That usually makes us mad. And then he gives us like, actually like, kind of like this guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. That's how he always ends his review segment.
I got a formula going.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so. Yeah. The last review is like, he didn't like it, but he did like it. But it's also fun.
But it's also fun.
He's using fun words.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, someone else said, like, there's no understanding of what these gangs do other than coordinate their outfits. So it's just like, they don't do anything. They just coordinate outfits.
They don't actually do anything. So I joined the gang. Now what do we do? Well, we just sit around and talk about what we're going to wear next
week.
We
got to take your measurements, that's for sure.
Yep. That's first move when you get in the gang.
What's your hat size? We got to get your mime top hat for you.
You prefer wooden or metal bat?
whatever I can get. You know, hard times.
Well, friends, listen up. Before we move on to breaking down this movie scene by scene, I want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Cedar Ridge Distillery. We are quickly approaching our 100th episode and 2-year anniversary, which is insane to me. And now that we've established ourselves, you know, we got some momentum going. Lots of sponsors have been reaching out to us. But back when we started, phone never rang. Nobody cared about the old confused breakfast. We'd be like, can you give us $5 and we'll mention you on our podcast? They're like, go away.
Please leave us alone.
And now they're like, we'll give you $1 million. We're like, no.
Can you give us?
We're not doing that.
No, actually, if you do have $1 million, we will take it. But the only one that has trusted us from the start, I mean, Cedar Ridge has been with us for probably about a year and a half of this journey.
Yeah.
And they trusted us from the start. We've been on the same trajectory as them. We've been climbing the podcast charts. We're up to almost 1 million downloads now, which is insane to me. And same for Cedar Ridge. They're winning award after award and building new barrel house after barrel house. I mean, people love this whiskey, and we do too.
I think they've surpassed 1 million sips at least.
1 million sips, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I think we in this studio have surpassed 1 million sips, just the three of us.
Hell yeah.
But partnering up with these guys because they're local is important to us, but also the fact that we do truly love this product. So you got to go check out Cedar Ridge. They're one of the fastest growing whiskey companies in America, named Distillery of the Year in 2017, made right in our backyard. You can get the quintessential American single malt, the collaboration with Slipknot.
Fuck yeah, dude. Oh, no.
And of course, the flagship bourbon, which is one of the things we are always sipping in studio. So you got to go to CedarRidgeWhiskey.com. You can order it online straight to your door. You can go to your local distributor and say, get some for me. If you're in Iowa, you can probably just go grab it on the shelves. But we're telling you to go support them because they directly support us. So not only are you going to get some whiskey in your hands, but you're also helping us out and you're helping Cedar Ridge out. So drink responsibly. Go to CedarRidgeWhiskey.com.
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 Well, boys, what do you say we grab 6 more of our best friends, come up with a dumb name, and
Logan,
even
you're in.
5 more of our
five
best friends.
More.
Hell yeah!
Come up with a dumb name and an even dumber corresponding outfit, and then we take the streets to run amok in the night, defending our turf. Can you dig it?
Yes.
Can you dig it?
Yeah.
Can you dig it?
Yeah!
Here we go. So Cleon, the leader of the Warriors, meets up with 8 of his most trusted gang members, and they travel by subway to a meetup containing over 100 other gangs. The meeting was organized by Cyrus, the leader of the Gramercy Riffs, the most powerful gang in New York. He proposes a citywide truce and alliance that would allow gangs to control the city. Most of the gang members applaud this idea, but Luther, the leader of the Rogues, shoots Cyrus dead as police officers arrive to raid the summit. In the ensuing chaos, Luther makes a false accusation, which leads the vengeful Riffs to attack Cleon. Meanwhile, the other Warriors escape. Did you read that they initially wanted to make this sometime in the future?
Yeah.
I'm so glad they didn't do that.
No, yeah.
That would have immediately taken me out of it. Upon it is 2022, This movie was 1979. That's true. I would have watched, the thing I most liked about this movie immediately was the early 80s vibe to this.
It helps make it more timeless.
Yes.
Like what you're saying.
That's true.
Absolutely.
If you're like somewhere in the near future, it's like, huh.
Well, yeah, I'm looking at Escape from New York right now. It says 1997, New York is city, you know.
Yeah.
It dates it, but like, you know, we still love that movie, but I think you're right.
Right.
That makes sense.
In the director's cut where they're doing the comic book transitions and everything, they did put it back in there. With like a comic book splash almost, and like kind of a font or whatever. And I think if you're buying the director's cut, you know what the movie is, so then it's not as big of a deal.
But you're right.
I agree with you though. I'm glad, like, upon my first watch, I never saw that.
Yeah,
yep, 100%.
And I get it, it feels like it's a post-apocalyptic and there's no one around, but sort of it's just because it's like fucking 3 a.m.
yeah,
like,
right,
like I'm fine with that.
Yeah,
I'm fine with them roaming the nights and then going home at 7 a.m.
it's, you know? Nice to think that it's just like this movie takes place in another dimension or something, you know, just like it's like a different time
plane,
plane of existence, I guess. And it's like that's what Walter Hill wanted to do in the first place. He was pushing for the comic book aspect because he's like, I don't know how we can ground this and like make people believe that this is like a thing that happens in New York right now,
right?
And to like adding to that aspect, to believe it, to just to be like kind of like an alternate universe rather than, you know, 1997, in the near future or whatever.
Yeah.
It's better for me too. I agree.
I feel like I watch this movie and I do think of it like a comic book. And in that regard, it's the only thing that's really colorful is the characters, you know?
Yeah.
And some of the transitions, even not counting like the director's cut, but that is the way I think of it. And so that also helps me kind of play into the movie, I guess, thinking of it that way.
What a absolutely gorgeous shot on the subway. Mm-hmm. The head-on subway shot for me just does it completely. And I love this intro in general because it's establishing what we need to know. Mm-hmm. It's that, hey, these are the guys we're rooting for. Here's all of them. Mm-hmm. We're slowly going to tell you why we're here, where we're going, while showing us some cool nighttime shots of setting the mood of where they're at. Mm-hmm. Like, I thought the intro was fantastic.
I liked it a lot too. I was gonna inquire that about, especially to you. And now that I know you haven't seen it, that's cool to hear. But I do really like the, you know, them getting together and showing other gangs, but also we're cutting back to the warriors, our you know, protagonists, and they're like, you know, we're not bringing any guns, we're not bringing anything, we're just, you know, we're gonna go there. So they're setting it up all up. It's just, I don't know, it really sets it in for you. Like, you really get used to it.
It sets a pace,
yeah,
I think, but by this like cut back and forth between the train and their comments to each other and their discussions that they must be having.
Yeah.
I think it just sets a pace because it starts to make you feel like very almost kind of fast paced.
Mm-hmm.
I really like that. Did you like the music?
Yeah,
I love the music.
I wanted to ask Mike now, what did you think of the opening track?
All of it felt like I'd heard it before.
Mm.
Yeah,
and it's because there's such a resurgence of that, this 80s retro wave music, synthetic. Like, the only thing that could have been better than some of this music for me would be The Midnight.
Yeah,
the Midnight riding current music, like Shadows by The Midnight in this movie would have just, like, I almost feel like the song is sort of about this.
I know.
Yeah, if you've never listened, if you're here listening to this podcast, you clearly like 80s music or 80s vibes. Movies and vibes. So, like, check out the band The Midnight. We've talked about them before, but they perfectly could just move their music into movies like this, and it would just be like, whoop.
Yeah,
you would never know the difference.
I would take that. I would take that recut of all the music being replaced by like The Midnight. I'm good with that. Like vampires,
it's like a fan cut.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of their videos online are fan cuts of like their music to 80s movies.
That's cool.
Like the Breakfast Club one is just one of the best ever. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah. So,
Can we get vests and call ourselves like the Confused?
Well, what would our gang name be, and what would our outfits be?
So if we had a gang, and then let's do like individual gangs as well, because I've got one.
Oh, Of course you do.
Our gang. Okay, actually, I know what our gang is. Our gang is John Candy from Home Alone, his polka jacket.
Oh yeah,
that says the Kenosha Kickers on the back.
We're the
Kenosha Kickers.
I'm okay with that.
that's what we because it's a yellow jacket.
Yeah,
looks real good.
Yep, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that.
Felix Gray glasses on.
Felix Gray glasses.
Bottle of Cedar Ridge that we can break and kill people with.
You got it.
I was thinking. I mean, I like that a lot. That's probably the better idea than what I'm about to say. Like maybe just because I have Rick DeCoen on my mind, like every episode. The Berbers or something.
The Berbers.
Our territory is just a cul-de-sac. That's basically what they were. They were like they formed a gang in the Burbs to like, spook on these other guys, these newbies that were in town.
I like it.
I think we'd be the Lost Boys, and then our theme song would just be the Lost Boys from the Midnight.
And we hire a guy to follow us around with a saxophone.
With a saxophone or a boombox. Like we would have a boombox guy, like drummers.
Okay.
You know, like the Civil War had drummers. But we have a boombox.
We have a guy with a guitar and a guy with a boombox and a guy with
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, we know what if Sean had his individual gang, we know it would just be it'd be no shirt and long black trench coat.
The trench coats,
dark glasses,
slick backed hair. If not, you can go bald.
They'd be called the Neos and get misconstrued all the time.
So the ones, but there's multiple of you. We'd have vampire teeth. We'd have
Lone Rangers.
We have vampire teeth, a trench coat. And the makeup from The Crow, because it was The Matrix, Blade, and The Crow
and
for me. All trench coats.
Unbelievable. I wouldn't fuck with Sean.
The trench coat Trinity.
I would never fuck with a bunch of guys.
And Trinity's from Matrix.
Wow.
Damn.
Goes full circle, baby.
Do you guys have one?
I don't know if I do, man.
We can come back.
If you think about it, unless AJ, you can think about one.
We'll come back around. I don't know. I'd do something lame like the Wolves.
lame like this purple vested group that it cuts to. It's like
the Boppers.
Yes, it's like a bad bachelor like party.
We're all gonna wear purple.
Yeah, or like the groom picked this out. Like
it's our wedding colors
out of a magazine, like from a bridal thing that was in a mall down in the basement.
It's like a Jostens magazine. They got these out of.
Yeah, I like purple. Cool.
It's like a magazine that these gangs flip through. No, I've already seen somebody wearing that.
Yeah, somebody's already got that one. I think it's funny because I hate the majority of these gangs. Mm-hmm. Like I hate the mimes. I'm like, what is even the point here?
Yeah.
With the mimes and like even that. Then there's the one. Then there's some that just really had no thought into it. Like there's a gang that walks in the subway and the one guy like. Tries to freak out this lady when he walks by, and they're just literally just wearing like black t-shirts.
Yeah, there's like the most basic gangs, and then there's like the over the top ones. Like
we're the Fonzies.
Yeah, like the guys who have like the black like tanks with the white like fringe on them or whatever. They're just like walking through, and then there's the other guys who are like, oh yeah, we're very politely getting our tokens. For the train.
That guy is a nice leader, though. If I wanted to join a gang, that's probably the one I would join.
Yeah.
Because it seems like a really nice leader guy. Like, he takes care of us. Pays for lunch.
He pays for lunch.
He's got, guys, don't forget, every single file over here, I got all the coins. We're going to get you in there. Remember to validate so you can get back.
Did you guys see the list of like all the gangs and everything?
There's a ton. Didn't they come up with about 100 of them?
Oh, dude,
I like most of the names at least.
Yeah. Names are very cool. Yeah.
Except there. I did see like a couple. There was just like where it feels like they got lazy, like the sports. I feel like that was a little bit, you know. But then there's the yo-yos. Another one that I thought was funny was the Terriers. And I was just like, the Terriers, that seems a little friendly.
Well, there could have been a lot of meanings in that. Maybe the guy was Terry, his name was Terry.
True.
Maybe they were all, maybe you had to all be named Terry to be in the gang.
or be with a guy named Terry or lady. We're the Terriers, like we're doing Terry. I don't know. The Nickel Stakes. That was another one that I thought was worth mentioning.
That's
the Nickel Stakes.
Turnbull AC sounds like a fucking cool ass band name.
It does.
Play with Gigi Allen back in the day or something.
I agree. Did you guys happen to look up what the original opening was like in this? It was actually supposed to be like a daytime shot.
Oh yeah.
And I found it on YouTube. You can go and find it.
Mm.
And it gives a little bit more context, but I totally understand why they didn't do it.
Yeah.
And I think I read the reason was is they don't want anything other than like the end to have some sort of daytime relief.
It's a great moment.
Yeah. And they talk about it. They kind of explain who each person is and what their role of the nine. And you also find out how big the Warriors gang is.
Because, this is just nine people.
This is just nine.
Their best nine guys.
Right, right. And so you actually find out that the Warriors is actually a gang of 120 members.
Mm.
And they also have additional affiliate members, too. So,
and this is all narrated, right?
It was by Cleon. Yeah. Almost.
Oh, okay.
He's like explaining this to them. And he's, again, it's almost like he's giving too much context.
Yeah.
Like, okay, we get it. And then you just expect him to turn the camera and say, everybody got that? I'm glad they didn't do it that way. The way that they opened this movie was kind of intense, kind of spooky, and kind of like, and very fast. I loved it.
Because Walter originally wanted a narrator to like open the film up and kind of get you up to speed and everything like that.
Mm. Didn't need it.
And he wanted Marlon Brando to do it.
Okay.
And so the producer's like, no. And so I think in his director's cut, he does it.
Really?
Now he does like the narration and like the comic book strip kind of thing. That's like his thing. So yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Whatever.
So they all arrive. There's this huge arrival of we're supposed to assume there's 990 people there, or something like that. 100 gangs times nine.
Yeah. Nine delegates.
900 people
from 100 gangs.
Yeah. And so I don't first time watcher here. I'm just like Cyrus, huh? I'm just kind of like. This is weird.
Cyrus.
Yeah, this is weird. And the whole, I've heard Can You Dig It so many times in my life.
Yeah.
Because so many things I feel have copied this. Like, wasn't that like a wrestling guy? Was that The Rock? Did he?
Well, no, recasting. Probably. The Rock.
Could play Cyrus.
Would play Cyrus.
Would play Cyrus.
100%.
But Young Rock.
Exactly.
Yes. Oh, yes. Not movie star. Not San Andreas Rock.
No.
Not masterpiece movie star.
I want to smell what he's cooking. Like, that's...
It's just so funny to me. Like, I actually had to rewind it twice, the Can You Dig It part, to be like, why did he say that three times? And why on the third time did people be like... Yeah,
I like, can dig it.
Is it? Was he saying it too quiet? They're like, "What did he say?"
Yeah,
and he goes, "I said, can you dig it?" Like, what? Can you dig it? Oh, he said, "Can you dig it?" I can dig it.
So this is a positive meeting.
Yeah,
we're all fun. We're having a good time.
It's like an evangelical church or something. That he's just like that. He's like,
he's on a little pulpit up there. He's kind of just hanging out, like giving the little talks.
We get like inserts of cops arriving too, and I just gotta imagine like the event coordinator was just like talking to like his right hand man. I was like, did you put flyers up next to the police? You put flyers up next to the police station.
Next to the police station
of our gang meeting.
I told you not to put up any flyers.
No flyers at all.
I told you that we sent out messengers. We don't need flyers for this.
But I remember when I asked if you need flyers, and you said, "Well, yeah, we need everyone to know." And so I came up with flyers.
No, I said no flyers.
How
I said no fly zone.
How do we get people to come to our gang?
We sent messengers. And then they hand out the flyers. That's what happens. They hand them the flyer.
I'm fired.
Yeah, you're fired.
Yeah. Okay.
There. We did get a little flack on TikTok recently that whenever I had a Mike's Fan theory that we didn't play the sound bite. Oh. So I apologize. We're gonna bring it back here.
Respect.
Oops. Hold on.
Mike's Fan theories.
Don't you worry about a thing.
I'm Sean.
There it is. So in case you just joined us, we created that live in an episode. I can't remember what it was. But there is a theory out there that Cyrus was actually an informant for the police, which is how the police all knew about this.
Oh.
And the idea was that we're going to take the nine best gang members from all the gangs, put them in one place without their armies of gangs, and keep them without guns, and we're going to surround them, and we're going to take them all out.
So maybe
that Cyrus was either part of it, or he was busted, and that this was what he had to do to like make things happen. And so then maybe Luther knew. Luther knew about it. Maybe he wasn't so crazy.
Yeah.
So that's a thought.
I would love that if he justified it in any other way other than I don't know. I like doing things like that. Putty tag.
We're not saying Luther's in on this fan theory. We're just saying maybe he's
okay.
in on this.
Okay, maybe he figured
David
something
Patrick
out.
Kelly is the best.
Yeah, that was.
And that's a fun theory. That's fun
that's
to think fun. About.
That is fun.
We're not
that
saying
is very
it's real.
Fun to think about.
I love that.
In an alternate reality.
Of where, this alternate
where
reality.
Where your version is definitely right, this is kind of fun to think about.
Yeah.
But that also brings up another thing. Why didn't they, there was 900 of them. Why didn't they just, they all agreed, yeah, we should fight the cops.
Retaliate.
Here's your chance.
Yeah.
They didn't have enough cops for that.
Revolutionary
no, not
tonight. No way.
Not even close.
Yeah, that's there's two to a car, and there was only squad cars there. There's
and
no
they had
way,
to drive up through like hills and stuff and yeah. graveyards. No there's way. No this way. Was their chance.
Yeah.
Very true.
Absolutely. So one of the things I kind of I read on this is the chaos that ensues after that, right? When they tried to shoot this, they had to give very specific
wow.
directions on who was running what way. And they had like they had it sectioned off in that kind of almost amphitheater style that, hey, these two rows are running against each other, then those are running this way, that row is running this way, and if you're in that row, you run that way, and it's supposed to help, it's controlled chaos
yes.
at that point.
It looks good.
It
they
looks,
are all running full speed.
Yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know how he, they got actual gang members to like be extras in this spot.
Did they?
And like some of the police like knew about the production and like came and like kind of spied on it a little bit.
Wow.
And so I don't know how he directed that, but he's a good one.
There was a lot of outside gang stuff going on. I didn't know that they were actually in the movie, but
yeah.
There was a lot of outside gang stuff going on. Like they paid some real gangs to actually protect some of the
yeah,
sets.
From other gangs.
Yeah, from other gangs. And then, well, I guess that makes sense then. They're like, hey, you want to be in this movie?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So,
yeah,
okay.
That's their payment.
Yeah.
Yeah, they got like $500 a day or something like
yeah.
that as a gang to just like
it's not
be
bad.
There, help
it's
us out.
Yeah.
Don't let them smash our shit.
That's,
yeah,
a, that's
exactly.
a lot of Subway fare, dudes.
That's yeah. a lot. It's a lot of tokens.
Well, and they did only film at night.
Yeah.
And so like
right.
that's when things get nuts. You know, nothing good happens after midnight and
it's
they're
true.
Out trying to do a production with a bunch of just crazy people on the streets and
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. In the streets of New York.
Nuts.
Like, yeah, that is pretty wild.
Well, let's move on to scene two. So the Riffs put a hit out on the Warriors through a radio DJ. Swan takes charge of the group as they try to get home. The Turnbull ACs spot them, but the Warriors escape on a train. Not far away, the train is stopped by a building fire alongside the tracks, stranding the Warriors again.
This seems like the most hippest radio station in New York, and I don't know if like it's like a XM station or something. Like it's beyond FM and AM or whatever. It's like the gangster radio station, but it seems like it's the coolest and most hippest to me.
It seems to me like this is it must be if the Gramercy Riffs like have this radio station and they like pipe out the news or like what's going
yeah.
down in the streets essentially
hidden in the music and the DJ
yeah.
stuff.
Yeah. Or and if not, if they don't own it, but that's like what they kind of do. Or that's how like news is distributed, kind of like, you know, radio, hidden radio signals and things like that.
They don't
that.
Got Facebook pages and groups and stuff like
right.
that. Right. So you
exactly.
got to get the news out somehow.
Yeah.
Sometime in the future. It's like, well, you didn't predict Facebook.
We should make flyers for the radio station though.
Yeah.
Right?
No.
What? We want people to listen. I don't understand.
You're making too many. They're going to shut down the radio.
Sean, this gave me super big Tales of Halloween vibes.
Oh, yeah.
Her interjection of this DJ talking about what's going on
oh,
in
true.
The night while things were going on, like it just immediately transported me to like,
true.
It's Halloween season.
Yes.
Can't wait to watch Tales of Halloween.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really cool like choice just to even have like an outside perspective narrator, and it's just kind of ominous, and it's just cool. I don't like to have that choice of just like an overarching narrator who's like an overseeing this whole thing like you are, like the audience is, but then like commenting on it details that you don't really
yeah.
know is really cool and really smart to me.
It's also interesting because, you know, Coney Island is obviously a long ways away.
End of the line, man.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, all these other gangs have been able to maybe get back to where they're supposed to be. There's a lot more like closer boroughs and like neighborhoods and whatever their turf is, you know? The idea is that we and a lot of these other gangs know what's going on, but the Warriors still don't.
Yeah.
Right.
And that's what's very interesting about it. They still don't know that people are talking about them and thinking it's them. And that's the vehicle that they use to get there is very cool, I think.
Yeah,
it is a really cool plot device of it just like the whole world's against them. The whole city's against them at this point, and they have no idea, and they have to get back to Coney Island to be safe.
Right.
So in theory, shouldn't the 111 Warriors back in Coney Island have heard this and hopped on a train to come rescue their brethren?
Mm. Oh, boy, that would make for a real awkward conversation.
Lots of flyers need to be handed out.
they're probably listening to the radio back home like they do every Saturday night or whatever it is. They're like, what? What? Our boys?
Wait a second.
They took out fucking Randy.
Cyrus the virus?
Cyrus the virus?
Yeah.
The one?
The one. You know, the can you dig it
the
guy?
Can
he
you
always
dig
puts it?
It
into conversations.
He always says that.
He always says that.
He really does. He emphasizes that.
Cyrus has like an early morning talk show on that radio station.
What's it called?
Can you dig it?
I think I figured out the three can you dig it thing. So
okay.
Cyrus's big thing is, can you dig it?
Yeah.
And he always says it like that. He always goes, can you dig it? But like today he's like, guys, I'm thinking like, I kind of want to change up the inflection on that because I kind of don't like doing that.
Okay.
Yeah. So he's like, I think I'm just going to say it regular. So he goes, can you dig it? And everybody goes, I said, can you dig it?
Yeah.
God damn it. Can you dig it?
Whoa! Yeah!
Before I could barely hear you. I don't know why.
I just don't understand.
That's my idea. Cyrus the virus, man.
I see. Cyrus the virus.
I did also hear that the DJ, that they told the radio DJ that they were filming her entire face.
Oh, really?
They told her, they go, yeah, this is going to be the shot. This is how we're going to frame it. But then they just actually zoomed in on her lips and her mic because they didn't want her to know that. So that she would still talk like normal and have inflections like normal.
I guess that's a bummer for her, but
right?
it's a cool shot.
It's perfect.
Especially like the backlight.
Yep.
And I love it.
Her lips moving. It's something so soothing about it.
It is,
me. I don't know why.
Great voice, too.
It's also, but there's also something unsettling about it to me. You know, like there's like, she's very smooth talking, but saying some very unsettling things.
Very true.
Like, she's literally putting out the word. She's putting out a hit on nine dudes, essentially.
What's up, boppers?
Eight dudes now.
The Warriors are out there.
Yeah.
Cut their heads off.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's some Luther Vandross.
Here's some Luther Vandross.
Enjoy.
Okay, so they have to get off this train. I like when the first conflict with the Turnbull ACs.
Oh,
that's
man.
Really cool. And the fire that makes them all get off.
Was that set? Like, did a gang do that on purpose, or was that just a house fire?
I don't know, man.
I got the vibe that someone did that to get them off the train.
Yeah, I would imagine.
Yeah.
Well, it stops the trains, and if they're at the end of the line, that real live bunch from Coney. And they know that they're at the end of the line. They're going to shut down whatever trains they can.
Mm.
They could be doing that. You're absolutely right. Because, and they allude to it to a degree. Like, the real question we should be asking is, who set that fire?
Yes. Okay, you know? Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Yeah, and so I think somebody definitely did it on purpose to a degree.
There's multiple Mentos commercial moments in this movie. In this movie.
that charge from the Turnbull ACs is a Mentos commercial.
Because when they get... They get in the subway. It's my favorite part, and they're all tense.
Yeah.
But the minute the doors close, they all start smiling. They're like, "Fuck yeah,
Mentos,
the fresh maker."
It's like whole movies of Mentos commercial. Anytime there's a chase to get on the subway or whatever,
dude. How terrifying would that be, though?
Ugh.
To see a busload of just bald-headed men with 2x4s and chains coming to roll you down, dude.
Yeah. Got one shot.
Are you
kidding
this train. Me? That is...
Don't miss your opportunity.
Do not miss your chance.
Spaghetti.
Mom Spaghetti. Yeah,
thank you.
That would... Like, I love the anxiety that they're able to build, like, at different portions of this movie like that. I think it's phenomenal.
And they're a scary gang. And then when they get to the orphans, it's just sad. This is just, like, the saddest moment.
Let's move on to the orphans, then, shall we? So setting out on foot, they encounter the orphans. After Mercy, the girlfriend of the orphan's leader, instigates a confrontation, the warriors run to the nearest subway station with Mercy following. At the station, police ambush them. Vermin, Cochise, and Rembrandt escape by boarding a subway car. Fuchs is killed by a subway train.
So yeah, when they get to this gang, and it just
we'll call them a gang, loose.
It's a group.
It's definitely a group.
They somehow all have black eyes.
If the Warriors are like an original band, the Orphans are a cover band.
Yes. or just like this,
or a tribute band,
or just like this band that's written two songs and just is just banking on that in the whole time or something. Yeah. You know. But when it said like, oh, we're the Orphans, I'm like, oh, that's sad. And it's just like, they don't have many lines either.
Yeah.
And it's just so sad to me. I don't know.
Well, and why wouldn't they get invited to the thing?
Yeah. Why,
let's just invite everybody.
They don't look like they smell very good. Like, I'm just being honest with you. Like, they look pretty dirty. Like, and it's just a t-shirt that said, like, somebody, like, spray-painted Orphans on the back.
Actually, you're right.
So now they have to always wear that shirt. So, of course, it's not going to smell great.
The Orphans weren't invited to the gang meeting.
Invited. It's kind of sad.
It's just like they're, like... I mean, like, then they start posturing up, like, oh, we'll kick your ass. Like, yeah. Just ask them where their parents are. They're going to back down right away. It's just done.
Yeah.
Billy, come in for dinner.
Yeah.
Shut up, Mom.
I never had a Oh, I see what you did.
There are some very funny moments that probably are not supposed to be funny in this interaction and everything, though, too. And for me, especially, like what you're talking about, it's like, well, you say, what do you mean? How could it be a big deal if the Orphans ain't with it? It's like, God, you're just so
in denial, dude.
It's just delusional at this point. And then, like, they almost, like, feel bad for him.
I know.
And they're just like, oh. It's like, no, he didn't miss out on much, man. It's like, well, you don't think we can handle it? You don't think, well, we got a real heavy rep.
I'm not saying that you can't handle it. I'm just, you're not.
And then the guy walks up and hands him a flyer.
Sorry, man. I just fell in between the cracks of the seat of my car. I was supposed to bring this to you guys.
It just flew in my face as I was walking down the street because I'm so sad.
But really, really, Mercy fucks this whole thing up.
Yeah, 100%.
They were going to let her go, and the Warriors were like, we're not going to fuck these guys up. Like, we're fine. We're just going to walk through here. And Mercy, like I got to tell you, Mercy, her first on-screen thing with the chicken noise, Molly goes... Ugh.
Yeah.
Like, and I felt the same way. I'm like, gross. Yeah. I hate this girl and everything about her.
Yeah.
And she had a long road to build up for me. And it completely changes by the end. Like, I do sympathize with her, but her first on-screen interaction was nothing but trouble.
I agree.
I think it's supposed to be. And I think that it kind of is a testament to the way that they do set it up and the way she portrays it. It's done pretty darn well because you're right. She is the worst. Leave it to a woman. To stick her nose in man's business. No, I'm just kidding. It's just like,
wow.
But you're just like, this is another funny moment that it's just, and then
I hate that noise.
The face on that guy is just like,
I can handle this, Mercy.
He's like, please, just let me, would you just let me try to handle
this? Your parents couldn't handle you. You're fine.
Come on now, Mercy. Don't go looking for trouble now. It's just like, it's very funny the way they interact with her. And it just also adds to how like insecure and almost non-threatening the Orphans are.
Yes.
You know.
So sad. So. They are awful to her though. Like everything that they say. And it's of the times, I guess.
Oh yeah.
And it's like a gang kind of like their verbiage and everything. Like I think earlier James Remar, what's his
Ajax.
Ajax, if you're into Dutch football.
There you go.
Indeed.
Ajax, then.
Keep the belt, please.
I'll just stick to Ajax.
Sean's killing it tonight. He's on it.
Tough guy now. It's a gang movie.
Fucking good. He's killing it.
But like one of them, I think it's Ajax. He's like, are we gonna on our way there? Are we gonna like even tramp on some new wool?
Yeah.
Like, is there a gang member thesaurus somewhere that like these guys have to go through? Like they get their fittings and everything for their costumes and their outfits.
Word of the day is wool.
Wool.
Use that in a sentence
stands
today.
For vagina. Uses are. Use it in a sentence. Use it. They get tramp on wool.
Strange wool.
Yes. They get tailored, and then they get a gangster thesaurus.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Written by Cyrus himself. It's called You Can Dig It.
You can.
with this book, you can dig it.
You too can dig it.
Oh my God.
I just think it's really, like you say, it's really bad when it comes down and they kind of catch her following.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Do you think she was part of a ploy with the orphans, or do you think she was just going by herself?
I truly believe her. I think she was like, I'm out of here. Like, I think she thought she had this like great gang she was a part of, and she realized that they weren't a part of this thing and that they were just losers. And
right.
And I think she definitely had something for main dude. God, what's his name?
Swan.
Yeah. Swan. Yeah. I think immediately she's like, I just want to see where they went. Let's check it out. And yeah. And then she was in some trouble though. I mean, the rough parts of this movie are definitely like the language. Mm-hmm. Ajax especially, he drops three of them. Three F-bombs. Yeah,
he drops
the
new F-bomb three times.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah. And then, women are not portrayed very well in this movie for sure. I mean, they are... Rape is totally cool and fine and awesome. Like, yeah, sure.
Well, and like,
we just don't have time for it yet.
Yeah,
you know?
Some of the verbiage, it's very glossed over verbiage, like that they're using. Like,
yeah.
While they have her kind of like, when they catch her following them, and you're just like, ooh. Listening back to that,
like, we can all run a train on you. And like Swan even says, like, aren't we supposed to like this guy?
Yeah, exactly. It's like, gosh, I feel bad for having the subtitles on. Cripes. It's like, I don't want to read it.
Yeah.
it's bad.
Like you said, there's things that aren't necessarily supposed to be funny in this movie, but they kind of are. Like, then they get to the subway scene where they get ambushed by the cops.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just hear the subway Scooby-Doo music going, like, Scooby-Dooby-Doo, where are you? Because they're, like, going in and out of stairs. Like, they'll go down one stairwell and come out another. Another Metro's commercial, a Scooby-Doo thing.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it's like the wide shot.
Yep.
And, like, there's two levels.
Yep.
Wait, no, that's the guy with the skate later on. Never mind.
Yeah.
But there's also that where it's just like cops are going this way, they're going this way.
Yeah, they go up one stairwell but come down another one.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
But I was like, I was blown away by it because so far there'd really not been any like fights.
Yeah.
You know, like there really wasn't any. In fact, overall, there's not many like fighting scenes.
Yeah, like
this.
Brawls. But not many bopping.
Yeah, but then you see the setup of this subway train in Fox. And I'm like, oh, what?
Yeah.
What's going to...
Yeah.
Like, I'm watching this for the first time going, okay, are we going to nearly miss here? Is the cop going to get it? And just flings him overboard and just dies.
Gone.
And he was the guy we were just talking about in the intro, right? He was the one that's supposed to be like the love interest of...
Correct.
Of Mercy.
We assume he was like the leader as well,
of course.
Right?
Yeah, we're just
because
assuming.
I want to bring up too, I also like their hierarchy, I guess, within the gang. It was like, yo, you're war chief now. And Remar is like, yo, who made you leader now?
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. He was supposed to be like everything. He was like, Walter Hill loved his performance so much.
Which is weird because he wasn't...
He
good.
Wasn't really remarkable at all.
No.
And maybe they edited him out a lot or something.
But he would have gone on to something else
and
done something that was like, wow. But he never really did. So maybe that was just misjudgment or something.
Yeah.
Or-
I just think that hierarchy, like I say, it gets explained in like the newer or in the original type of opening or whatever. And yeah, it's like, yeah, Swan, you're number two, you're a war chief, you know, in case we get into a fight, then assuming that Swan is just a badass.
Yeah.
You know, Ajax and Snow and like their muscle and Cochise, he's muscle, like middle soldier, whatever he calls it. Vermin, he's supposed to be carrying the tokens. They call him the bear. And he's supposed to be carrying their tokens and like their money
and Molotov cocktails.
Yeah. Right.
We didn't talk about that.
Speaking of which, okay, I got to go back for a second because you only got one. This is you only got one. Don't waste it. And like they show up and it's a very intense moment for a second. I love the way they show their feet when they run in.
Yep.
It's very comic booky.
The set scene where it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. And like he's just you see you warriors, you see what you get when you mess with the orphans, and they just casually take that Molotov off.
Is it time? It's time.
it's time?
Yeah, no, I'm saying like that's yeah, what they're okay. like. Is yeah. it time? It's time.
He's like, use that bitch. He's like, here it is. And this is the moment where I feel like the orphans realize they're not a heavy set. They're like, holy shit,
that was my uncle's car.
Well, that is his uncle's car. And also, they haven't seen fire in ages, so they're gonna use that as much as they can. They're getting all their dead cats out and like all their rats, just like cook them up and
they
eat.
Gotta make sure that they can, you know, survive for a little
exactly.
while.
Turns out that was the moment that made the orphans cool in their neighborhood. Yeah. It's like, dude, they brought fire to our neighborhood.
Jesus.
It was amazing.
The orphans wouldn't be nothing without the Warriors.
They went back and had a moment. They were like, well, that escalated quickly.
Wow. I was just going to brandish his knife and hope they ran away. But
I really thought we were going to scare him off, at least get one of their vests. But Jesus, they lit a car on fire. Would you guys ever do that? How'd they even do that? I don't know. I lost my paper, too, my article. I lost my flyer. We can't even talk about that anymore.
Mercy's dress is ruined.
Mercy's like,
I got to be honest. When I first joined this gang, I was given a plastic butter knife.
I'm going to be honest with you. I got out of hand really quick.
Can't believe we passed that up.
but then going back, very serious. Fox dies, and but that's why they killed him off, you know. Mm-hmm. And then they're just like, we're done with that guy.
Gone. Never talk about him again.
And not even in the credits or nothing.
But I think it really worked. It was very shocking. Like
it took it up to another level. Now I said, okay, things are happening. Yeah, now the cops are here. People are dying.
People can die.
Yeah. It shows the severity of like the cops' like presence in their world too. Mm. Of like what that is to them, or you know, it's kind of like on these gang members, it's like no holds barred.
Yeah,
you know, so yeah, it's kind of scary.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Have we talked about, is this Baseball Fury fight?
We're getting there right now.
Cool. Woo-hoo.
So Swan, Ajax, Snow, and Cowboy defeat the Baseball Furies.
The Furies
in a brawl. After the fight, Ajax becomes sexually aggressive with an undercover police officer and is arrested. Upon arriving at Union Square, Vermin, Cochise, and Rembrandt are seduced by an all-female gang called the Lizzies and invited into their hideout. They narrowly escape the Lizzies' subsequent attack, learning in the process that the gangland community believes the Warriors murdered Cyrus.
I think the Baseball Furies are like the second coolest gang in this movie. To me, second to the Warriors, I believe.
I'm sorry to say this. They're my least favorite.
Really?
I hate it. I hate it. Like, imagine, like, the Warriors are cool, right? And they're like, cool. I got to go, babe. I got to go. It's nighttime. It's midnight. I got to go meet one of my dudes on. I'm just going to take what I'm wearing right now, and I'm just going to take my shirt off, and I'm going to put my cool vest on.
Yep.
I'm ready to roll. These guys literally have to be like, fuck, okay, I got to get my jock strap on. I got to get my cleats on. Now I got to paint my fucking face.
I don't even like baseball.
I hate baseball. And clearly
their prep is like,
it's so dumb. I would be out of that. It'd be like, we always go back to music. It'd be like joining a Kiss tribute band. It's like, fuck that. Yeah. I'm not going to do this every night. No. I hate this. Being Westmoreland from Limp Bizkit, like, can you imagine what he has to go through before?
Wes, you're the only one.
No wonder he quit.
And then came back.
Yeah. But like, that's the thing. You're 100% right. Like, how many times do they have to wash their sheets because their face paint got on the fire?
And they're
They fight a lot. They get sweaty. It gets guys to get in their eyes, you know?
It's kind of like a Juggalo thing, probably.
Yes.
Like Juggalo baseball group, essentially, is what it is, right?
It's just weird.
I'm just saying, like, in if you want to defeat these guys, like the orphans, like, you just ask them where their parents are. They're not there. They're going to make them even more sad. They're probably going to...
They're a little league team.
But you ask the baseball fears, like, name one baseball team.
Yeah.
If you're wearing a baseball jersey, name one baseball team.
Oh, yeah? Uh-huh. Who's your favorite? Who's your favorite all-time hitter?
You like baseball, yeah. Who's Babe Ruth? You know,
yeah.
What was his RBI?
Yeah, you just got to throw some baseball facts at him. They'll be discombobulated enough to.
Or if you actually throw baseballs at them, are they inclined to stand there and like?
Yes.
But notice how, hey, yeah. Man,
I like
that. Actually, you had it twice, so you're down to none now.
Whatever.
You're down to none
okay,
now.
Okay.
You get what you said?
I gave it
to you again.
Yeah.
But see how dumb, like, they hold the bats really weird? Is that, like, a thing? Some of them, when they're running, they have this weird hold on the bat. Instead of holding it like this and running like that, they, like, it goes underneath their arm.
I think it's wind resistance.
You think so?
Yeah.
I just found the whole thing with the baseball guys creepy. in a weird way, but also like, I hate these guys. I'm glad they got defeated.
It's a very creepy, and honestly, I think it's a very, putting yourself in their position, like you get out of the subway, you're like, okay, well, we're out of there, right? We ran upstairs and downstairs and Scooby-Doo'd it the whole way to get outside of this train station. Now we're just waiting for our buds, and we look out, and we see baseball clowns.
Yeah.
They have not said a word.
Are you kidding? That would be terrifying.
It is.
That would be absolutely terrifying, and they're like, we better get out of here. and
start smacking the subway walls like the Bear Jew and Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah,
you
dude.
Know?
Like, they
dragging
are running
a bat down the street.
Yeah.
Fuck that.
They're running full speed for that long. That is... come on.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah.
I think that's the least believable part of this movie.
They haven't eaten all night.
No. They didn't have... They missed out because the cops cut the thing short before the luncheon could happen. So
the Capri Suns.
They're handing out sack lunches and stuff, just like with an apple. Do you want an apple or bread?
I'm vegetarian. Hold on. Those are coming around. They're coming around.
Just stand right here.
Cut apples. No peanut butter cups?
Stand here with the vegan nights, and we'll be coming back around. the whole veganite like group is just standing there like, well, where's our lunches? We RSVP'd vegan lunch.
I do like this fight though. Like, it's... I'm glad.
No, hold on. Okay.
All right.
Never mind.
Let's get back to lunch.
What is it like?
The logistics of this lunch.
Is it actually vegan? Or
do they have a pescatarian option? Oh yeah, tuna salad. Sorry.
Is it Cool Blue Capri Sun? If it isn't,
better be Pacific Cooler.
Yeah. So we do see some action. It's a cool, like, kind of, you know, fight and violent
it's
scene.
Like the first fight, really?
Right,
like
pretty much.
Fight?
I do like Ajax or James Remar's character. Like, he beats him up. He like finds a bat and he's like, fucking A. Like, I like that line a lot. It's just like, oh, that is him. He just wants to, he's looking for action the entire night.
He wants a fight. He wants to get laid. Like, he is just out there to just live life.
Yeah.
And, but this is one of his, this is
it's
like his
downfall.
This is, well, yeah, you're right. And this is also kind of his redemption for like his character, if you will. He's like, you can see him like kind of like,
that's true,
like helping Cowboy along and just saying like, come on, man, we got to keep going. He's trying to like motivate him. And then when Cowboy cannot make it, he's like, good, you know what?
I'm sick of running.
And he turns around and he makes sure to like kind of help first.
Yeah.
And
do you think
fight
that's
first
redeeming
for him?
Is it supposed to be? Because then he turns around and wants to rape a girl in the park.
And I then think... it turns around and you're just like, you know what? You had your opportunity and you just blew it.
Yeah.
Oh, 100%.
You blew it because you wanted to blow it. Yeah. How long was she waiting there?
Oh,
is what I wanted.
she was sitting there a long time. And how many gangs ran by?
Exactly.
How much did she see like running by? Of just like,
I've seen that trick before.
Oh, God. She's like, cops chasing guys down, and she's just like, turning the page,
just reading my book.
Oh yeah,
keeping her whistle hidden,
dude.
Exactly.
Did you recognize her?
No,
you didn't recognize her.
No,
that is Mercedes Rule. That's her real life name. She plays the undercover police officer. That is Josh Baskin's mom in Big.
What the fuck?
Oh my God!
This is her first role.
Holy hell, man.
I don't just sit down. Yeah. Keep me company.
Like, isn't that weird?
Oh my God, that's weird.
What
Josh,
if that's really
Josh,
her?
Police! Dude, she
crazy,
is the
huh?
That is amazing. Yeah.
That's really
I did not know
cool.
That. Holy crap.
I had to look that up. I was just like, she looks familiar. And then when I got to it, I said, oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. Pretty cool, huh?
Not to
stop now.
Not to completely glance past that fight of the baseball Furies, a couple of things. They were using like real bats in those fights.
Look like it.
And they like somebody like was it Michael Beck or Swan? Mm-hmm. He broke a dude's ribs.
Oh, that's right.
Like actually during that fight, and the shot is still in the
really.
It's still in the movie. It's like right near the end, I believe, when he kind of catches the last guy. And there's also a very funny shot of just a baseball Fury just standing there like, yeah, yeah, get him. And then somebody just comes up and goes, waste him right on the side. He's like, oh.
Ah, damn it.
Oh, damn, dang it.
My ribs. Ah, my ribs.
I didn't sign up for this.
I do have a prop.
Ooh, here's a prop.
This was a tough one until my last rewatch. I go, oh, there it is. Ajax has a dope-ass belt buckle. Did you ever notice that? He's got a belt buckle that's got this like gold face on it. And I tried to look it up. No one really is sure what that face is. Some people think it's Elvis.
Huh.
Some people think it's like Socrates or something. Socrates, if you will.
Socrates?
Yeah. but it just like when he's at the bench here, and you're kind of seeing a crotch shot of his crotch in the undercover cop's face.
Yeah.
You notice that belt, and it's pretty tight. I need a new belt buckle, I think, in my life. So that's where I'm going to go with prop.
All right, man.
Show, girl.
I have to take the three bottles Dave Patrick Kelly has at the end.
You get all three?
The mini bottles?
Dang yep.
Man. The mini bottles?
I want them just like hanging like on a shelf like that.
With a hand.
Yeah. With David awesome. Patrick Kelly's actual hand.
Oh, this might be too obvious. I want the switchblade.
Yeah?
I want the switchblade.
Which one?
I want Swans that from he the got end. From
that he puts in his belt later on in the film.
Yeah.
But because he got that from the roller skate guy.
Yeah.
Did he really?
He had to have.
Okay.
Because that's the only place he could have gotten it from. It's the same one. It's black handle.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
So our boys go, the rest of the gang, we're kind of split up here now. We've got we've got Mercy and Swan into the subway tunnels, which was sort of, that was just a weird moment to me. I like that they built up this sort of like potential future relationship, and it was kind of a cool moment, but it was also just sort of, it was still sort of weird. Like there wasn't like, I don't know. I just didn't like necessarily, like it was weird. He was still like insulting her. He had that line of like, tie a mattress to your back or something like that.
Brutal.
And it's like, geez, you know, like I get it. I get it. He was still kind of mistrusting of her. I guess maybe that was his thing, but I do like their development of their relationship, but that was still like a weird, maybe I just need to keep watching this movie and. Yeah. It just felt weird and abrupt to me of how that scene was.
Of them down in the subway tracks and stuff. The one line that sticks with me out of that conversation is, it's like at first you're like, that's a stupid thing to say. He's like, I don't like the way you live. And you're just like, whatever. It's like, that's one of those comments that you sit and you dwell on like 3 days later. You're like, way I live.
What's the matter with what I live?
What's that guy got? What do I live weird? Is this weird? And then you kind of think
about
it. You
don't live
like,
weird, AJ, man.
You're kind of like, you know, that's a pretty harsh thing to tell somebody. That's kind of a dick move, you know, bro.
That affected me for days.
Boy, yeah, this just became a core memory. Wow, that hurt. But it kind of gives her, I think it's kind of the start of her. Not redemption, but her arc,
if he had just slept with her there, then it would have just been a normal night.
Right.
Any other normal night for her. Cause she's a hooker, right? Like,
like a gang's like
pass around.
Yeah.
Or like that.
I mean, like that's, I guess that's kind of real.
Yeah.
If you want to, you know,
so she just figured that was what she had to do. Is just like, oh, I'll just sleep with this guy, and then he'll make me a part of his gang.
Right.
Okay,
yeah.
That's usually their initiation, is from what I hear anyway.
That actually makes me like that scene a little bit more. That Swan, even in his dickheadishness, knew what he was doing.
Right.
He's like, no, I'm not going to do that with you right now. You know, like maybe later. But hopefully this will help you change.
Yeah.
Kind of a thing.
He's like, you're just another part of everything, and it's all bad. And,
he sees that she's pretty tough and can take care of herself too. And I think he kind of sees that as well. And that's maybe why he doesn't do that. He's like, well, this is a worthwhile woman, maybe. Yeah.
Well, and then the rest of the guys go to Castle Anthrax.
Castle Anthrax.
Is the first thing I thought of since our last movie was Holy Grail. Was like all these women like, no, come inside. No, come on. Come on, we're going to come inside. Like, come in here. We're all going to pick whoever you want. It's going to be awesome. I was like, this doesn't feel right.
No.
It didn't feel right at all.
Way too good to be true.
Yeah.
And they were like the most scary gang.
They were,
of
dude.
The entire 100%, fucking
dude.
Movie.
They're packing real heat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Like, that was intense because, and you know what? That is the absolute taking it back to that what was like Arthurian and what the original story or what's it based on
Greek,
and stuff
Greek
and
mythology type
Greek
stuff,
mythology yeah. the succubus of like bringing them in and
sirens
yes and trying to lure them in and then end them. What a very scary moment when that dance starts and the two of them, Cochise and Vermin, are pulled in.
With mm-hmm. your pants down.
Who's the one that's not? Who's the one that's very skeptical and is just kind
Rembrandt.
Of, Rembrandt?
Yeah.
Rami Malek could play him. That's
absolutely.
That's my other recasting for him. Yeah.
Oh, totally.
Anyway, sorry.
No, I was just, like, by the way, that song that they put on during that moment, during that final scene with the Lizzies, that was redone. It was actually different music, and that's why they dance weird.
Oh, really?
That's why they dance like out of time. It somehow is. It works. You know what I mean?
This didn't know how to dance back, and
that's tension.
They don't understand dancing, and but
it just seems like everything's off. Even their dancing is like, oh, what? Why is this off?
Yeah, and I just think it's very interesting, and it becomes. I love the turn and seeing it through like Rembrandt's eyes. Of how he's watching this scene unfold and he's like, this is not right. And then that door locks and you're like, uh-oh, this is bad. And that whole, dude, the chicks are packed. This is one of the best, I think this is one of the most exciting scenes actually.
Yeah, I think so too.
The way they put it together too, like the slow motion and dude, when he claps that chick with the chair, that is like boom! Oh,
had to. She's unloading that pistol all over the place.
It was intense. I loved it.
Yeah,
I loved it. It was a really good one. By the way, Vermin was supposed to die.
He's supposed to die in that scene?
He's supposed to die,
but,
actually.
Oh yeah, but they actually just like really liked his like kind of comedic relief in the movie.
Yeah.
We kind of like
this guy. Keep him alive.
Yeah, they decided not to kill him off, and instead they basically killed off Fox.
They're like, somebody's got to die. We'll just kill Fox.
Somebody's got to die. But yeah, I thought this was a great scene, one of my favorites.
Yeah, it was cool.
And when they do finish it up, I like that Rembrandt's the only one who got injured. And they're like, hey, man, we got to keep it together. We can't be dancing around and doing all this bullshit. It's like, you're the ones who wanted to go.
Why'd you let us go?
Why did you let us go in there? This is ridiculous.
Oh, my God. Well, should we finish it up? Final scene?
Let's go.
So Swan and Mercy are nearly attacked by another gang when the rest of the warriors show up to defeat the threat. At dawn, the warriors finally reach Coney Island only to find Luther and the rogues waiting for them. Swan injures Luther right as the riffs arrive. Masai admits he was wrong and lets the warriors go free while finishing off the rogues.
Hit it! Before I'm on a train to go punch a face, I'm on board.
Actually, on a train to go punch a face.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you got?
I mean, is it Trevor? What's his goddamn
Luther?
Name?
Luther.
The reason I was going to push this at this moment in time was it's the roller skate guy for me.
Is it really?
I cannot stand the look on his face. He is a serial killer in the making.
Yeah.
And he needs to be punched.
He is the human embodiment of a Chucky doll on skates.
Yes.
Yeah.
100%.
He needs to just be jacked. And by the way, the rest of his gang don't have roller skates on.
No.
Yeah. So they're just like, hey, that's Tim.
I thought that was going to be their thing.
Yes. No, it's just Tim. He likes to wear skates. He thinks he's good at it.
He
just
likes
let him
to
do
wear
it.
The skates.
Just let him
technically,
wear
he gets around on them. And
he gets pissed if you talk about him. Don't talk about his skates.
He's always the first one to the fight because he gets there faster. It's fine. he's my most punchable face.
I'm
Are you
with
going,
it.
Luther?
I'm with you. No, I like... Because Luther is like a love-hate kind of thing because he's such a good performance.
Yeah.
But he is such a bitch, I guess.
For me, it's Luther second in command, honestly.
Oh, yeah. Dude.
He's pretty... And it's for one particular moment, one particular scene, and it is when Luther's yelling like, there, that's the guy. I saw him. He's the one who did it. The Warriors did it. And he's like, yeah, that's him.
I got a witness.
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah.
Did I do good?
Yeah. So you know, we did miss a scene where Luther's on the phone and they're like stealing food from that girl. Who was Luther talking to?
I had this question too. I don't know.
True.
Like,
was he like reporting back to? And what's the gang that Cyrus was?
The Riffs.
Was he reporting back to them?
I don't know. I almost think the more I thought about it was that he actually wasn't talking to anyone. With how crazy he is, he had to somehow like tell the rest of his gang that someone told me to do it, and I need to check in with them afterwards. Because why would he call the Riffs? They were there. They saw what happened.
Yeah. And they're pissed about it.
And he's telling them, he's like, yeah, he got shot. Yeah,
Or
is he telling the rest of his gang, maybe? Like, maybe he's got a warlord leader at home for the rogues?
There's another part of this, like, lore. So, okay, I'll be honest with you guys. I actually downloaded the audiobook of the original, like, Saul Urich's actual novel. It's tough to listen to. I'll be honest with you. It's very long. It's very detailed. Like, not long, but very detailed. And then they also mention this when Fox and Swan are talking to the orphans. They say their youth worker. Oh, yeah, our youth worker talks about you guys all the time. So I'm wondering if, like, this youth worker is some sort of affiliate that either works with them in and out of what they go to prison or whatnot, or is like kind of a reference for them of what's happening, recruiting, things like that. And I think this is way too deep. I'm so sorry, guys. I think it's like maybe it's like a youth worker.
That makes sense.
What they call a youth worker in this world. And it's just getting feedback and giving feedback.
Right.
I don't know. I also heard that maybe it was the cops, you know, that kind of a thing too.
Okay.
So that Luther might be an informant to some degree and was maybe commissioned to kill Cyrus.
Yeah.
I don't know. Hmm. Like I had a lot of questions about that too. So
I like both those.
Yeah.
I don't have a theory.
Yeah. Well, fine.
Exposition.
Show indeed. He's a real bad guy.
Yeah.
One of the scenes I feel that would like be overlooked in this movie, maybe it's because I do have fresh eyes on this, is the subway back to Coney Island with the like the prom.
Yeah, dates. The four people that come in the train.
That was the first time when this movie took a little turn for me, where it went from like, oh yeah, this is just some kind of dark thing and like we're fighting and we're going to get back to where now there's some real substance here. Mm-hmm. There's some underlying amazingness to this movie of the like, both these guys, Swan and Mercy, have terrible lives.
Yeah.
They've been forced into this career of theirs or whatever. We don't even really know how old they are, you know, whatever. They grew up into this. And then you've got these like super rich kids who like went to prom and could afford to do that and probably went to a private school and were just out enjoying the night looking all nice. And you've got them looking like shit from what they've been through. And that was a really powerful moment. Like, that's when I was like, I love these two characters.
Yeah.
That was the changing point for me, especially the way Swan was like, don't fucking touch your hair.
Mm-hmm.
Don't.
You look great. Don't do it. And he just stared them down. Like, he's not going to fight them. He's just too tired, but he's like, I'm just going to make it awkward for these guys.
It's a cool thing because the juxtaposition obviously is like they've fought the entire night to get here, to get even on this train. Yeah. And these four people just were having maybe the time of their lives, you know, just and that's what they did to get on this train. They had to scrounge. They had to beat people's asses. They had someone die a part of their team, evade police, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just the complete opposite of what they had to do.
The idea of them getting on the train after going through that fight with the punks in that bathroom and literally like fighting for their lives this entire night, and then to watch them get on laughing and they just enjoyed their night and they're going home after a fun evening of whatever they were doing. It is that I think that just adds like this context of. And then again, it also gives a glimpse into the world outside of this, that this isn't what the world actually is.
Yeah.
There's a whole other world during the day of normalcy.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
it's the whole scene, I think, is just humanizing the goons where it's like, even in real life, I've never been on a New York subway or anything like that, but I have to imagine that there's some, every story I hear, there is like characters of like some dude shitting in the corner or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, you never think about that kind of thing. Like that guy who is sitting there and looking disheveled and worn the fuck out, and you're just like, I'm trying to go to the top of the Empire State Building or something.
Oh yeah, I'm having a good time. Meanwhile, I've never been on this subway. This is so cool. This is so fun. Oh my goodness. I'm here on the subway. Ooh.
Meanwhile, that guy's night started like 48 hours ago.
You know? when his car got blown up by a Molotov cocktail.
And the orphans came and cooked.
Oh my God.
Mormons on them.
I got to get to work now. I got to get on the subway 2 hours before normal.
Yeah, you just got to get on the subway because somebody blew up their car from a Molotov cocktail.
I'm just saying.
Oh, you're 100% right, dude.
So yeah, daytime.
Yeah, finally, now we're daytime, man.
And it is very stark and very cool looking, and I love the menacing car with David Patrick Kelly and their rogues, and how they just kind of know that they're there, and they go under the thing and watch them kind of arrive, and like the whole like suit up moment where like, do you have your weapon? You got your weapon. Yeah. Everyone's like shit like a bar, you know.
You do what you got to do. Yeah. to get packed.
Yeah.
Yeah,
It's about to be a fight.
I do really like that. Everybody packed, and he's got his knife, and he says he's going to take him out to the beach. And are they just like, again, though, where's all the other gang members?
Yes.
Maybe that's why they took it out, is because they didn't want it to seem like, you know.
Yeah, because like, where are they? We'd be questioning that. Yeah. Where are they? If you hadn't said anything, I wouldn't have known that there was any other gang members.
See? And so that again puts it in perspective of, they look down on a gang that's 30 members, like the orphans, 30 members strong, and they're only 9 dudes. Like, what makes you think you're so much better than the orphans? And you have to think about, well, there could be 120 of them, but where the fuck are they now?
Yes.
So that's my only thing. They're just gonna have to fight this out now. I don't know if there's like, there's so much lore behind this movie that we just don't get. And that's what makes me sad. It's not like Predator, where they had a movie and then they had a bunch of sequels that gave us all this lore and understanding. We just have to deal with it.
Yeah. You know? It's okay, though.
And I'm fine with it. It's just, that's became a frustration after watching it so many times. So,
well, to me, you kind of fill that in to yourself, you know? And I think that's what's cool about this being, and like what I was saying in the beginning, like this movie kind of takes place in another like realm or dimension.
Yeah.
You know, where the rules of 2022 don't apply to this, whatever's going on, you know? I like that about it a lot.
Well, and of course the Warriors come out to play is such an, I then, as that happened, I go, oh, I've heard people say this before.
Yeah.
Like, I know this, the clanking of the bottles, I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what is that noise coming from?
And
then it switches to him and you're like, Jesus, this is creepy.
It's very creepy, but you don't know why. Cause if you're not invested at this point, then you're like, what the fuck is he doing?
Like my wife who walked in is like, I hate this movie.
Yeah.
At that exact moment.
Like, he originally like wanted pigeons.
Dead
or
pigeons.
Or something. Dead pigeons to like communicate that. But he,
how crazy he is.
He improvised these 3 bottles just like right on the spot. And he was thinking about like some bully in his life when he was a kid, who was just like kind of menacing him to come over, you know. Ugh.
Who did that to him to some degree of like, come out and play.
Yeah.
I love how he does it 6 times. Like, I envision like he starts up, come out to play. We get it.
Yeah.
Because from where they're at, you can't really even hear that loud.
Yeah.
it's like, but in the car, it's super loud with the windows.
Yeah, it's super loud in the moment.
Shut up!
Like zooming in almost, and it's like, oh, it's just so intense. But then it looks like it's like Swan and the rest of them. They're just like,
well, even like the driver, even like the driver next to him, just like,
and then he just he looks at the camera. He's like, he does this every Friday.
Man,
I love so much about how much of a whiny pile he is at the end of this, and it's very badass. Like that final little dispute and everything, and him throwing that knife into his arm, and you know, it's a very interesting, cool finish, I think,
and a really scary yell from him. Who knows what the Riffs did to him?
Oh my,
yeah.
Who knows what happened on that Coney Island?
I think
beach?
They initiated him into their gang.
Wow,
that's where they got the idea for chili dogs, actually, for Coney Island.
Hey,
so
that's not even funny. Oh my God,
why are we laughing?
Yikes. I'll tell you what, though. Very rarely do you get those moments of like where a perfect song just like stops you in your tracks.
Yeah.
In the City by Joe Walsh. People think it's the Eagles. The Eagles did record it, but Joe Walsh did it first. The movie, the version you hear in this movie is Joe Walsh.
He wrote it for the movie, right?
Yeah,
he did.
Because if you read the lyrics, it fits so perfect. And I'm so glad that this whole thing played out, because all I wanted to do was hear that song from start to finish, and they just kept walking.
Yeah.
And they just kept walking. And I'm like, can you imagine that they basically said, hey, we'll tell you when to stop.
Yeah.
Just don't stop. So what are they talking about? They're like, oh, man, you think it's a good shot? You think people are going to like the movie? I don't know.
And apparently they didn't tell them when to stop. And when they finally walked back, Mercy, the girl who played Mercy, was like, what the hell is going on? They actually gave her flowers at the end of the movie.
That's amazing.
Oh, good. Because it was like a wrap, you know? It was like, that was the wrap to the movie. And they just kind of put the bow on the movie there, and it was
what a beautiful moment, like them walking away in their little groups, and just like the sun's coming up, they're ready to go to bed.
Makes you want to stick around to listen to the song and kind of just watch that too. I like that a lot.
I think of being in high school and college, of those nights that never ended, to where you actually do go home when the sun comes up.
Yeah.
And you're just like, it's the Dazed and Confused.
It's like the world's end.
It's kind just
of.
Like, yeah. Man, that was awesome. And we'll talk about it tomorrow, but for now, we're going home.
Right.
We're going
just take in this moment a little bit. Yeah.
Nobody's woken up yet. You're at Coney Island all by yourself. It's pretty amazing. I thought it was a fantastic.
I kind of want to see this song over Quint and Brody. Or not Quint.
Hooper.
Hooper and Brody, like, paddling along in the city.
You want to see, like, Quint's just... him just dead.
Yeah,
after being that's what I want to see.
Half digested by Bruce.
Love it.
Okay,
love
great.
It. One of my favorite things. Well, boys, you got anything else left on this?
That's all, man.
So we have dissected it with a modern eye. We've wiped away all the nostalgia. We got to give it a modern day rating. AJ, what do you think upon this viewing, man?
I love watching this movie, man. I love revisiting it. I can't give it like a super high rating, because I think some of like even the acting is clunky, and you know, maybe even a little bit of the production is a little bit dated to a degree. But at the same time, I have to base things on like rewatchability and watching it all the way through.
Yep. Not getting bored in the middle.
Not getting bored. And I think that has been honestly a testament to, I just had this conversation with a buddy of ours, and that it's become like kind of a testament to the way I do rate movies. And I'm sure, you know, everyone is so upset with me with Monty Python, but my idea is that rewatchability and not being bored 2/3 of the way through a movie is so important to how good a movie is and why you rate it for what you
are. Are you reaching for that cell phone or not? You know, like,
yeah, when you're watching a movie. You know, am I checking the time like to a degree, or checking my notifications, or did I get an email, or did I get this? And I don't do that during this movie. I really don't. Maybe, you know, directly after the fight with the punks, like the bathroom fight.
Right.
Maybe. But I really enjoy this movie nowadays, guys. I'm actually going up from my 7.5, and I'm going to give this I'm going to go ahead and give this a 7.9.
Mm.
Sean, what about you, man?
Hell yeah, I agree with what you say. I think the one of the perfect ways to watch this, it may not be able to happen anymore, but like in a crummy New York theater with a bunch of people who love this movie or something that, you know. I think it holds up. I think Walter Hill directs a hell of a movie. One of my favorite directors, actually. And I think there's something to be said about it being like an hour and 39 minutes, I think is what it is. Because, you know, Jaws... and not Monty Python, but Jaws definitely it's got length. I don't feel it at all.
Nope.
I really don't. But knowing that this is just such a tight little thriller, and it's got this one plot line go through the entire thing. They have to get to this point, and they have to get through all these other things to get there. It's just such a simple concept, and I love that so much. And I think they milk what they can right out of it, and I'm going to give it an 8.
Man. 8 for Shawner. So again, this is my first time watching it. This has happened a couple times where I love it, and I know that I'll probably like it more as I go. But I have to give it my current rating, and I thought it was a great movie. I really liked the end. I liked the way that I felt coming out of on their way back to Subway Coney Island, and that story becoming like a thing. The rest of it, like, I'm still like, it's not the best movie I've ever seen. Like, but I do want to go back and rewatch it. And I always judge my movies against like past ones. And I had to kind of look at my list and go, so, I mean, I do think this is great. I think my score will continue to go up, but for now I'm a 6.7.
Oh, wow.
6.7. Okay. So that's a 7.53 on our overall ratings of everything we have done so far. That is slightly better than The Mighty Ducks, slightly worse than Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I like that a lot.
I'm okay with that.
Don't you feel okay with that?
Like, yeah.
It feels nice.
I'm okay with that, actually. Yeah.
God, thank God.
Yeah.
Woo! Well, we hope you enjoyed the episode. Thanks for being here with us. Tune in next Wednesday. Summer of 70s comes to an end.
Oh, no.
I think we're going to have to continue. I think every August from here on out, it's summer 70s.
I'm down with it.
There's so many good ones that we can continue to cover.
Oh, absolutely.
So it comes to an end with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
It's going
to
be fun, man.
It's going to be a fun one.
Yes.
And if you're new to the podcast, go back this time last year. We talked fittingly top five summer movies.
Wow.
That was a fun one. Getting into the heat of summer, the movies that feel hot, that give you that vibe.
Yeah.
Perfect timing as we're coming out of it to go back and to listen to that. We also have a voicemail. You can always call us at 319-804-9596. Leave us thoughts on the show. Here's today's voicemail.
What's up, fellas? I had to call. Had to do it. Hey, Sean. How you doing?
Hey, buddy.
Listen, getting on a little road trip here, going out for work, and as soon as your opening music came on, I was getting off the on-ramp and on the highway. I was like, hell yeah, here we go. But then I realized you're reviewing Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which sucks. But I realized sometimes when the movie sucks, that's when you guys perform. Anyway, dudes, you're the best. Love you. Five stars, yada, yada, yada. Move it forward. Tell all your friends. Uh-huh, got ya. Okay, boys, have a good one. Later. Yo, dude, just left a message about getting on the highway, yada, yada, yada. Hey, I forgot to say I'm Adam from Chandler, Arizona. And, okay, bye.
Hell yeah.
Thanks, man. Appreciate that, dude. I kind of agree. Sometimes the better the movie, sometimes we get stuck more in analysis all the time.
Analysis.
You know, but you get into like a Blank Check and a Three Ninjas. We are on fire.
Oh, some God. Of my favorite times that we have.
Just like I'm ready. I was never more ready to light Ernest Scared Stupid on fire. Like during our review.
Yeah. I'm ready.
I just was ready to light it up.
Well, yeah, give us a call sometime. Check us out on social medias. AJ, let's take everybody out here, man. What do you got, dude?
Guys, make sure that you are doing your due diligence to follow us on all social media platforms. You know where to find us, at Confused Breakfast, just about anywhere. Twitter's at Confused BFast. I don't know.
ConfusedBreakfast.com takes them.
ConfusedBreakfast.com right is the only thing you really need to know
to
get all the links for all the things that we do.
If you want to go there as well, you can find our merch store and wear our logo on your chest. You can wear some funny sayings from the podcast on your chest. You can get some stickers. You can get some coffee mug with our name
mouse
on
pads,
it. Mouse
shower,
pads.
Shower curtains.
Shower like curtains.
Redbubble does it all.
You can get some bats with our names on it. Mm-hmm. Go for all of our merch. Go to our website, ConfusedBreakfast.com.
And we'd love if you support all our sponsors. Go buy stuff. There's links for all our sponsors in the ads, in the show notes, Patreon.com/ConfusedBreakfast, the best way you can support the show and get some extra perks. So
you bet.
I think we should go.
We should probably go.
Should we go?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm.
I love you.
I just really love you guys.
Can you dig it? Goodbye.
Can you?